You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers, and good afternoon to our overseas listeners, and good morning to Peter.
Good morning.
And good morning also to Neil Connolly. Chef Neil Connolly, who is in Florida. He was telling us about his new restaurant that's just won an award in Orlando. But mainly we're going to be talking about this wonderful book he has called In the Kennedy Kitchen, which is recipes and recollections of a great American family. Now, welcome, by the way, Neil.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've got great material here. Everybody is a Kennedy watcher, right?
Oh, yes. And it's going quite well. We're already in the second printing.
Oh, really?
And there are lots of things that you know that aren't in the book, I guess.
Oh, there's a lot of things, yes. But we had to keep it to so many pages, so we limited.
No, I was thinking about some of the things that perhaps didn't have to do with recipes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Everybody always being rather fascinated by things this family did, or didn't do, as the case may be.
They were a great family, and I get nothing but warm regards for them. They were a very close family, and I had a good time working there for the years, 12 years I was there.
Now, who set the style of the food they ate? Did you do it because you were a chef, and they said, "Chef, you know about food, give it to us," or was it the other way around?
When I first started there, I did my own menus, and probably throughout the whole 12 years, I did my own menus. You learn, like in any family, everybody has their favorites and their likes and dislikes, and when you work for a private family, I was a hotel chef and a restaurant chef my whole career, and, working for a private family, everybody likes different things.
Especially with so many kids running around, huh?
Yes, always. You had grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And it was a busy household, and the kitchen was kind of like Grand Central Station for all the family members, especially Rose Kennedy's house. Everybody would come to see their grandmother and always come through the kitchen first,
Where was your kitchen? Was it in Rose's house? Or,
yes.
Because there were several houses together, am I correct?
Yes, yeah, there's a group of houses. The President's house, Rose Kennedy's house, Ethel Kennedy. The Shriver's home was up on the top of the hill in Hyannisport.
Right.
Yeah, so it was four there. Mrs. Smith, the senator's sister, had a home there, but after the president died, she sold that and lived in New York.
Uh-huh. Now, how did you organize these? You interweave memories, memoir items, notes with the recipes, right?
Yes. I always thought it was interesting to tell a story, with a certain recipe or things like Rose Kennedy's 100th birthday party or Anna and Maria when they had a wedding week luncheon, which Jackie hosted. And it put some interest to the food. And plus, it's a great American family that people want to see the other side, how they live, and, in the back of the house, which is always... the last thing they talk about. And, the compound was a place they could get away from. They lived in a fishbowl outside of the compound, and when they got there, it was their place so they could get together with one another and enjoy the Cape.
Now, what are some of the family's most favorite things? Seafood, I gather.
Well, seafood was the most popular there. Obviously, we did a lot of clam bakes right on the beach, and lobster was always a favorite. Actually, we have there's a story in there about the senator and me used to go down and check the traps every morning down in Hyannisport Harbor. We got a license and bought some traps and painted up some buoys. And he just loves the ocean. He loves to sail and loves everything to do with it. So it was kind of fun every day to go down and check the lobster. Some days would have a couple of dozen. Other days would have none. And, of course, I'd buy most of the seafood purveyors and
Now, you're talking about Teddy Kennedy.
Yes. Senator Kennedy.
We heard a story when we lived in Washington. He had been there all that long as a senator, and he used to shop at a place we also shop called the French Market on Wisconsin. And supposedly he liked...
Tutu.
He liked young mutton chops. Now, can you confirm or deny that?
Oh, he always loved lamb. There's no question about that. Especially
for breakfast, this was, yeah.
Apparently he used to have these for breakfast.
He had a lot of different dishes. Lamb, I don't recall cooking lamb for a mutton for breakfast. A lot of times it was sheared eggs, or we did a po- poached egg from, you know, all the time with a mushroom sauce, which was one he seemed to enjoy. But
he was the eater, probably
his favorite. Pardon?
He's the big eater. He's the only one that was really ever that big, right?
Well, he broke his back in a plane crash years ago in a small plane, and he wasn't able to exercise, although he does. He plays tennis, he goes swimming, and actually when I was there, you know, for the 12 years I was there, he wasn't as heavy as now. His back really bothers him, and he does swim every day. Every day he would go in the ocean, even in the wintertime when he was on the Cape, he'd go in that cold, icy water and come out. But exercising was very difficult because of his injury.
Yeah, well, we ran into him in an airport about a year ago, and he just looked terrible. I mean, he just talked.
He certainly reminds us that we're growing old, too, shall we say.
Now, tell me about how much would individuals interact with you, as Jackie?
All the time. The family interacted with me all the time.
Kind of taste did Jackie have?
Jackie loved, you know, classical French cuisine. She loved seafood, especially, you know, on the Cape. That's some of the greatest areas of fishing off the Grand Banks are right there in New England. So we always had great fish. We used to get it, you know, daily off the day boats when they still had day boats back then. She was just a down-to-earth person. It kind of took me by surprise, you know, how she actually was. She was really down-to-earth and very friendly. I'll give you an example. On the morning of Caroline's wedding, she called me up from the president's house and said, "Neil, come over. I want to take a walk around the grounds." And we walked around, and there's a picture in the book of Jackie, a policeman, and myself was standing there that somebody shot. She went around and was, you know, told the police, told the people, you know, setting up the tables and chairs that she had a place next to her house where they could get a sandwich, a cup of coffee.
Oh, nice.
Just plain relax. Now, I mean, anybody on the morning of your daughter's wedding with 350 guests, you know, she was a very caring person and wanted to make sure everybody was taken care of.
Oh.
And that's the type of person she was. Just wonderful.
So they actually got married on, I'm on pages with pictures of the Caroline's fairy tale wedding, and you catered that?
No, I didn't do that wedding. The family's in, and my responsibility was the family, and they were.
Oh, okay.
I took care of all the family events and had all the luncheons and dinners prior to everything that was happening.
Who did cater that?
I believe it was the Silver Palette, was it, out of New York?
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, that was in 86, I believe that wedding was. Yeah.
They just reissued that book, the original Silver Palette Cookbook.
Yeah. Well, see, here's how you go about making lobster stock. First of all, you get lobsters.
That's right.
No cheating. Whole lobsters. None of this cheating stuff.
That's right. Do it the right way.
All lobsters are specimens that are not perfect enough to serve. Oh, cull lobsters are specimens that are not perfect enough to serve whole.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter a bit to the taste.
That's a good stock, whether it's lobster, fish, veal. The stock is the key ingredient to all good, you know, dishes, sauces, soups. You know, to me, it always has been. And you know, at this restaurant here in Orlando, at Docks here, we do everything from scratch. We even make the crackers here.
You're jumping ahead, but tell our listeners the name of your restaurant. Where are you? What are you doing?
We're right in downtown Orlando. The name of it is Docks. My partner is an orthopedic surgeon, and chefs in the industry used to call me the doctor of food. My daughter-in-law came up with the name. Why don't we name it Docks? So now it's D-O-C-S. And we've been open for 2 years, and we just got ranked in the top 20 best new restaurants in Florida. So it's doing well, but we do everything here to get, you know, back to that. We do everything here, you know, from scratch. And the recipes in the book are very workable. There is all the dishes that the family liked. I submitted, you know, over 300 originally, but we broke it down into, you know, recipes that were really the family's favorite and were easy to work, you know, for the public to enjoy the book. And they're actually what I did at the compound, and they were all kitchen tested. And a lot of books today, unfortunately, they really don't kitchen test everything. And I had them kitchen tested by four different people, and everything works really well.
I can absolutely see that. I think the only challenge that those of us who live in the interior parts of the United States is that
you don't get the quality.
It's harder to get the quality of like of sort of like the side ingredients that you use. So you're looking for clams to go in this dish and mussels to go in that dish and things of that kind. It's just, you know, you just can't get those easily every day.
Well, when I moved from Cape Cod. I still have a home in Cape Cod, but when I moved down here to do this restaurant, people in the north always told me you can't get great seafood in Florida, and that's just not true.
Oh, no, I would consider that to be stuff and nonsense.
I can get fish, I can get king salmon off the boat 24 hours later in my restaurant.
Sure,
And you have some great fish companies throughout the country that are, the public can access and get, some good product out.
Oh, this has just absolutely revolutionized the business, hasn't it?
It has, it really has, which is nice. Years ago, it wasn't the case. But
now, when did you leave?
I left in 95, right after Rose Kennedy, right around the time Rose died.
Uh-huh. We know the woman who was the ghostwriter on that biography of Rose Kennedy.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
That was the one that was written a good long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
It wasn't the last 20 years of her life. It was the period before that.
Yeah. But it was written as an autobiography, wasn't it?
I think it was, but it was a story so far. And it turned out there was quite a lot more. There was at least two decades more of the story left.
She was a wonderful woman. She didn't have a gray hair in her head, and that's a fact.
Is that
104,
amazing?
That was amazing.
Unlike Ronald Reagan, huh?
Yeah.
Well, listen, this is a great book with wonderful photographs, both the photographs of the food and the family photographs, and it's a good read as well as having very tantalizing, easy to execute recipes.
And I'm going to send a friend of mine in Orlando whose nickname is Doc.
Okay.
Doc Matheson. I'm going to send him
I'm
going to send him to see you very soon, and he'll introduce himself. And so when he comes in, just let him know.
Absolutely.
I said hi, and you'll all have a wonderful time together. And I get to Orlando. I have always considered it something of a dining desert.
Yes, it's changing.
I'm glad you're changing it.
We get a lot of people down here. We get some talent down here now.
Last thing, do you have a website?
Yes, www.docsrestaurant.com.
Right.
Online, see the menus, see the restaurant.
Yes, and also everyone can go on our website, and this book goes up today. On the website.
Actually, I think it's already... You asked me to put it up, and I think it's already
there. Oh, then it's already on. Under... it's www...
It's called the OTM bookshelf at www.onthemenuradio.com.
And just scroll down, find the book, and buy it. Well, thank you very much,
Neil. Well, thank you for having me.
And I look forward to seeing you in your restaurant.
Well, that's good.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to take a break.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go. Fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
Hey, kid, over here, inside your radio. Name's Ralph. I'm an energy hog. Hey, if you're going to waste energy in your home, I'm going to pig out on it. Anyway, I got a deal for you. There's this new website called energyhog.org. Forget about it. It teaches kids how to get rid of us energy hogs. So you promise not to log on to energyhog.org, and I promise not to eat your radio. Deal?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
EnergyHog.org. Forget...
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We refer you to our website as we usually do in this segment. Visit us online at www.onthemenuradio.com.
We're getting awfully predictable.
Well,
we're going to have to change it. We're going to have to change this up. Let's speed up the show a little bit here. Let's just zip into it.
we have a guest who's going to put zip into it.
We have a zippy guest.
Her product sure puts a lot of zip into our cooking. And we have Katie Das. How are you?
I'm good. Great to be here, Ann and Peter.
Of Das Foods LLC. And they make wonderful salts. And they also make wonderful French salted caramels. Katie, tell us a little bit about your company. How did it get started?
Sure, Ann. First of all, thanks so much for having me on the program. Our company is really, really young. So we launched our salt line, which consists of six different cooking salts, in October of 2006. And caramels have been introduced in January of 2007. The reason we started Das Foods, and by we, I mean myself and my husband, is because we both are product developers. We love food, but what I mean by product developers are that both of us have degrees in food science, which is kind of like a chemical engineering, which doesn't sound very appealing, I know.
Oh.
But we both worked at Kraft Foods for a long time, and we realized that because we love food so much, we love the process of creating new products. We like gourmet foods, and we most of all like to please people and just, you know, bring some joy into people's lives with our cooking. We worked so long in food industry that we always wanted to stay connected with food. As they say, once a product developer, always a product developer.
But how did you hit the hottest trend around gourmet salts? I mean, you knew this was
hot
trend.
Because they were in the business.
So you knew that this was, I mean, I don't know how anybody can not be really involved with selecting a whole array of salts to be able to cook with.
How did the trend start? I think it's really at this point that a lot of people are. We found that a lot of people are trying to look beyond, gourmet crackers and gourmet chocolates. They're trying to see how can they bring some of the quality of life and the slow food into their everyday cooking.
Uh-huh.
And I think salt and sugar are the most basic ingredients that spice up our meals. Everything tastes better with either salt or sugar or both. And I think a lot of consumers and people like you and I are looking for ingredients like that to experience new things, to spice up their life through something as simple as salt or sugar.
Now, this is
That's how we found this trend, and we both cook a lot.
You do cook a lot, yeah.
We definitely cook a lot. We are very involved foodies, and we really celebrate that lifestyle when you can create something from a few simple ingredients of high quality and really put it on the table for people to enjoy.
We have a food scientist friend who swears that there is no difference between
the different kinds
of salt. They're all sodium chloride.
That.
Oh, he did really? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He modified the opinion.
Okay.
He says that all salt is still sodium chloride, but there are other attributes that affect the flavor. Originally, he said that the mouth couldn't tell any difference.
Did somebody hit him up the side of the head with a 2x4?
I think so.
but it's not the most obvious choice, and it's really interesting. You start from a fundamental understanding, I guess, of the fact that salts that have different non-salt constituents.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Can be used in different ways to create different kinds of flavors. But there's a basic question here that I think is one that we should start our listeners off. We should start our listeners off with the answer to this question. What's the difference between what you call cooking salts and finishing salts?
Absolutely. I think the cooking salts is something you actually cook with. So the table salt, the Morton salt, any other kind of brand or the brand of salt that you buy in the shelf or from the shelf, your friend is absolutely right, it's still a sodium chloride. The cooking salts that are more upscale, simple sea salt, the difference there is that, first of all, the price point or the price is a little bit cheaper, so you can actually afford to buy it and use it in cooking, anything from soup to baking. But it's usually a finer salt, and usually it dissolves a lot faster. And typically it doesn't have any color to it because, you just basically want the taste but not so much the appearance of it.
So in your line, you have a salt from Cyprus.
What? We have a salt from Cyprus, and we also have a salt from France that's called Selgri, and it's basically translated as gray salt.
Listen, Katie, why don't you outline these salts that you handle? And I want to mention that they come in jars, 6-ounce jars, but also you sell them in 3.5-ounce grinders. Right.
Precisely.
Now, you have, you sent this press release, which you list the kinds of salts, and you list features, characteristics of each salt. Mm-hmm. Do you want to run through that?
Sure, absolutely. So again, to Peter's question, we have some finishing salt and we have some cooking salt. So to kind of finish up kind of the narrative on cooking salt is that...
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah,
there is not much texture to cooking salt. It's just, you know, salt. So in our line, we offer the Selgri, which is a gray salt that's used for cooking. You can use it for finishing too. The difference between finishing salts, and we have five of them in our line, is that they usually have nice texture to them, meaning that you would crunch in them, and they are very mild and they're very pleasant, not very metallic at all. Is because actually what they do, the salt farmers, is that they just take the salty water or seawater, and then they just dry it under the sun. So it's a very natural, very beautiful process. It's great to look at, and there is really no additives of chemical preservatives or any kind of artificial drying involved. That's why you have these beautiful crystals, and you have a beautiful crunch and a very mild taste, because they're not heavily concentrated with sodium chloride. In our line, we have five different finishing salts. The two beautiful salts from Hawaii is black sea salt. It's literally black. It's a Pacific sea salt with a nice crunch to it, large kind of a flake, and it's mixed with black lava from the island of Molokai. And it's actually been used in the religious ceremonies thousands of years ago by the natives of the islands. And now it just became kind of a great salt to use for gourmet chefs. And it has a lot of minerals in it because, like I said, it was dried under the sun. And it also aids digestion because black lava is nothing else but activated charcoal. That's great for your digestion as well. The second salt from Hawaii is called red alea salt. Alea is a type of a clay that's unique and only occurs in these islands, and island of Molokai as well. So what the farmers do is that they take Pacific ocean salt and they mix it with the red alea clay, and it has beautiful kind of a crimson color to it, and it also has a little bit of an earthy taste. It's also finishing salt because you want to see the beautiful color. You can certainly cook with it, but then you lose the color and then you have the taste, but not really the appearance.
Yeah, I'm finding I like that one very, very nicely because it has a sort of a sticky feel to it.
Exactly.
And when you sprinkle it on the food, it adheres very nicely. It sort of spreads around the surface of the food very well.
That's exactly why we offer it in a grinder as well as a jar. And the reason we offer it in the grind is because with current lifestyle, a lot of our consumers don't have time to cook from scratch every day, but they still want to enjoy, you know, the salt and anything from eggs to salad to, you know, steak. And then the other finishing salt that we also have is salt from Cyprus. It has gorgeous flake, and each small flake looks like mini Egyptian pyramid. And it's just, I've never seen anything like it until we traveled to Cyprus and we saw the salt and we just loved it. And we wanted to bring it to the consumers and to, you know, cooks like ourselves. The way to use it is basically just to maybe, you know, sprinkle it in a baguette and grill baguette with a little bit of olive oil and a little bit of rosemary or whatever spice you prefer. And it's just, it has a great crunch, it has a great appearance. And we're really working hard to make sure that cooks know about it because it's just entertainment by itself, and your guests will talk about it if you serve this salt on anything.
Wow.
And so the other finishing salt we have is very unusual. It's a salt from India, and it has slightly sulfuric taste to it, but it goes very well with fruit, mango, for instance, or apple, anything that's sweet and sour.
Yeah, that's called Kala Namak Indian salt.
Indian salt. And Kala Namak, all it means is black salt.
Oh, okay.
In Hindi. And that salt is widely used in India. They use it on snacks. Like if you ever go to ethnic Indian store and you buy one of those snacks with, you know, little crunchy pieces of dough and a little bit of nuts on it, they all have like this very specific taste to it. It's slightly sulfuric. That's the Indian salt. And it's absolutely delicious. I highly recommend using it. It's great. The color is great. It's kind of this pink color. And the reason it's called black is because when they mine it, it comes, when it's in a big chunk, it's very dark in color. But as you grind it, it becomes lighter and lighter. And so when you buy it in a jar, it's pink in color.
Now, how did you find these? You researched this, and then you traveled and saw the production?
Exactly. We actually travel a lot, because I'm from Eastern Europe. My husband is from India, and we travel a lot. That's what we do, for leisure, for entertainment. And a lot of the salts we found during our travels, one of the things we always wanted to do, Anne, is we wanted to find farmers directly. We can always work with distributors, but we prefer to work with the farmers directly because we feel that then when we buy salts from them, it just goes directly into their pocket and contributes to the wonderful profession.
Yeah, and it makes people who buy your product feel good, too.
So you actually import directly from individual farmers in these places?
Exactly. We import directly from the farmers in our French salt come from Brittany, and it comes from a place, and I'm not sure if I can pronounce it correctly, it's called Gorand. And we procure our fleur de sel, which is absolutely precious salt, probably my favorite, and sel gris from Grand. The Hawaii salt obviously comes from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Indian salts come from Pakistan and India. And Cyprus salt comes from Cyprus, from the Greek part of Cyprus.
Katie, we're going to have to take a break now. Could you hang around? I want you very much to interact with our next guest who has written a cookbook where he says the most important ingredient is salt.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hang on. We'll take a break now.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding. An old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
You're listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WLFP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
The internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
We usually are very cautious with our investment money.
Then we got this email about this great deal on the internet.
They promised us a 75% return on our money in 90 days. We couldn't resist.
That was a mistake.
For information on avoiding investment scams, call the Pennsylvania Securities Commission. 1-800-600-0007.
Sponsored by the Pennsylvania Securities Commission. Edward G. Randall, Governor. Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
Not only that, but we've had an exciting switch of program directors in the midst of the show. So, Stefan, welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, and we have our last segment. We were talking to Katie Das about her artisanal salts or premium gourmet salts. And then in the meantime, we also got a call from Eric Gower. Is it Gower, Eric?
Yes, Gower.
Gower, the breakaway cook, and it's pure serendipity that he thinks the most important ingredient in any cook's arsenal is salt, gourmet salt, and here's Katie with her salt company.
Well, it's so funny. I should tell that little story about you too, because you remember when you were at Parallel 33 in San Diego, and you asked the chef what her favorite ingredient was, and she said salt.
Yes.
You haven't gotten to the best part. So Anne said, "Can you smell salt?" So Amico said, "Yes, I can smell salt." Anne said, "I can too."
She said it was the hardest thing to teach her chefs.
Katie, can you smell salt?
I can smell salt.
Eric, can you smell salt?
Definitely, especially when it's got green tea in it.
Yes, that's something I already told Katie we're going to be talking about that. Katie, you're going to just jump in the discussion as we go along. I just wanted to clear up your website to make sure the people, can they order from your website?
They can absolutely order from our website. Our website is www.dasfoods, it's D-A-S as in Sam, foods.com.
Yes, and as I said, they could order the 6-ounce jars that are really cute, and they stack, I noticed, which in my kitchen is a very important thing.
And they're pretty sturdy, and they don't fall down if you don't tip them.
Right.
Pretty good design, I think.
We sort of shortchanged the caramels, but I wanted to vouch for the fact that the French caramel with fleur de sel are to die for. and bite-sized pieces.
And they're all gone, of course.
I didn't eat them. You ate them.
I ate them.
Anyhow, I wanted you two to meet because, Eric, first of all, this is a great cookbook. Now, you talk about coincidence, serendipity. How did you end up with a photographer named Brakey for a book called The Breakaway?
You know, it's funny. It came down to three different photographers who I was going to choose, and they were all wonderful for different reasons. And, Annabelle was just this incredible person, and it didn't hurt that her last name was Brakey, you know? I mean, it was really serendipitous on that one. And I really like her work, and she's wonderful.
Oh, it's beautiful. Absolutely.
And,
beautiful.
I'm glad I chose her.
I'm looking at this pot with the steam. And what is it, green? What is it? Is it a teapot or a piece?
Yeah, it's a teapot with green tea. Yeah.
And the steam mm-hmm. fumes are kind of absolutely magnificent. I mean, this is good enough to eat, I must say.
You have a fundamental principle underlying this book, Eric. Why don't you just first of all tell us?
Yeah, I was going to say what. Just explain what breakaway cooking is. Well, that's the basis for this book.
Absolutely, yeah. Breakaway cooking refers to a style of home cooking that I do, and it's all about home cooking. It's not trying to be any kind of, you know, restaurant, cutting edge, bleeding edge thing. It's really aimed at home chefs without a lot of experience. But the word breakaway refers to my habit of breaking away from some established culinary cuisine And I started off breaking away from Japanese cuisine because I lived a lot of my adult life, actually for 15 years, in Japan, and I found myself surrounded by these wonderful ingredients, and I really knew very little about them. And I would more or less buy stuff at will and random and sort of taste them blindly, really. I mean, I almost conducted my cooking as I do with blind tastings for wine. I would start cooking with all kinds of things like pickled plums and dried shiitake and green tea and miso and yuzu and all these great things, and not really pay too much attention to what was done traditionally, because it was so easy for me to just go out my door and get great traditional Japanese food. I wanted to kind of play with the ingredients and use them in vegetables that I was growing in my garden. So, you know, it started as this series of experiments, really. And I found that it could be easily transferred to other culinary traditions as well. So I've been playing with Indian food. Since I moved back to San Francisco, I've been surrounded by these wonderful ethnic markets. I have Indian markets.
Well, now, Katie's husband is Indian. That there comes the das.
That's exactly right. And Indian cooking is wonderful and versatile, albeit labor intensive.
We were just at Tabla in Manhattan. Floyd Cardoz, have you been there?
Did you say Tabla?
Tabla.
That's the Danny Meyer outfit with Floyd Cardoz. Yes, it's a fabulous restaurant.
Absolutely. We were there last week.
He does.
It's one of my favorite places to eat in New York City, actually.
He does pretty much exactly what you do.
He has a new book out, and I've cooked my way through the book already, and it's just wonderful flavors.
Yeah, one spice, two spice.
Could I explain it just a little bit differently? Because in my look at the book, there's a little more to it that perhaps will mean that people won't feel quite as threatened by the idea that you have to be an alchemist to be able to use this book. It seemed to me that you were
talking about this book.
Yes,
Eric's
Breakaway
book.
Cook. Yes, it seemed to me that you would take a dish that was traditional, like roast chicken or scallops or some kind of fish or a piece of steak, and then instead of doing it with the same old six ingredients you used the last time, you would try another 12 different ingredients, and presumably you had successes and failures, and the successes you document and the flavors you try to wash away with as much beer or sake as you can.
Well, that's sort of accurate, but I really have take a very minimalist approach in my food and my cooking, and I try to really reduce the number of ingredients that I use. And if you flip through it, most of them have fewer than about six or seven at the most. So I'm trying to really simplify things. And one difference between my cooking and Floyd's, his is much more complex. I mean,
it obviously layers that way too.
And it's pretty time consuming, and it's just the flavors that he achieves are just magnificent. But I'm really trying to kind of make it less daunting. You know, a lot of the recipes are hard, and they take quite a bit of time. But I'm all about simplify.
Now, we were just talking to Katie about this particular Indian salt. Have you found that one yet that you put on fruit?
The one that tastes a little bit like sulfur?
Exactly.
Yes, I have. And, I haven't figured out the best way to use this salt yet. I'm starting off with small quantities. Well, I don't usually like large quantities of salt, actually, but I find that a very small quantity of that salt works wonders, but you have to keep the quantity very, very small.
Exactly. One of the things that you can do is very, very easy. You take a slice of apple, the Fuji apple works very well, or even the mango, like a Filipino mango, and then you would slice it, of course, skin it, and then you would squeeze a little bit of key lime on it, and then sprinkle it with salt, and it's just delicious, on any fruit. And it seems like a somewhat of a contradiction because it's sweet and salty, but it's going to taste very good. And that sulfur actually works with these flavors and enhances the flavors rather than overpowers it. But I completely agree with you. You have to be very careful with how much you put. A little bit too much, and everything will smell like salt.
Exactly. But no, I've long been a fan of salting fruit. It started even way back, with cantaloupe. Even when I was a kid, we used to put a little salt.
Yeah, we used to do it on grapefruit when I was growing up.
Salt on
grapefruit.
Watermelon, too.
I forgot all about that.
I grew up putting sugar on it, on grapefruit.
Well, you English, and they put sugar on everything.
It was a different kind of grapefruit.
Well, I thank you for reminding me about that salt on fruit, because I had just forgot about it altogether. Eric, as an aside, I wanted to say, reading your book, and this is not always the case, I felt like I wanted to know you and be your friend.
Oh.
That was a great feeling.
Well,
anyhow.
I'm really happy to hear you say that, because that's kind of what I was trying to achieve. It's just like, you know, writing to friends, essentially.
Well, that's good, because you have any idea how many books we read?
Yeah, but be warned, listeners, when you get this book, it's called The Breakaway Cook by Eric Gower, this man will take over your life. because he tells you at the beginning what kind of pots you need. He says, this is what you stock your refrigerator with. That's called the breakaway pantry. These are things you have to have at all times. And you have to have fresh eggs, tofu, unsalted butter, miso, fresh ginger, Greek yogurt, mustard, carrot juice in everything.
Yes, I didn't read that chapter.
Jam, kind unspecified, maple syrup, ouzu juice, chutney, fresh herbs, and garlic confit.
Of course,
so, unless you have all of those in your refrigerator, no, don't start trying to cook from this book.
Well, no, you can. You can sort of go as you can cook as you go. You don't need to have them all. It would be ideal to have them all, but certainly don't let that stop you from starting your breakaway adventure, because you can easily become a breakaway cook just by, since we're talking about salt so much, just by thinking about salt in these new ways. You know, like as Katie no doubt understands and knows, you can achieve marvelous flavors just with salt. I mean, it's incredible what you can do. And I like to flavor some of my salt.
Yeah, I promise you'd tell us about that. I promise Katie that you'd tell us about this flavoring of salt.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do with salt is to take about a half a teaspoon or even a teaspoon of something called matcha, which is it's green tea powder, and it's used in ceremonies in Japan, in formal tea ceremonies. Mm-hmm. It's used in very kind of traditional ways in
religious
tea ceremony.
It's actually the hot new bottled drink in California.
It is, isn't it? Actually, Starbucks has now a matcha latte.
Right.
But
yes, I've seen it too.
They add sugar and stuff to it, though. But the real stuff is just tea only. And if you just take a little bit of that and you combine it with some salt, and I like to use gray sea salt, the stuff from Brittany, and you come up with this incredible, deep green, surreally gorgeous hue of green salt that is just marvelous on poached eggs. You just have to taste it to believe it. There's something that happens with the green tea and the yolks. It's kind of celestial. It's very odd, but it's wonderful.
Yummy. Eric, maybe we should talk after the program.
but on page 36, listen, so he goes beyond just the salt itself and says, but I'm making flavored salts. He calls them finishing salts, but they're actually mixtures of salt and something else. So he's got tangerine salt, lavender salt, smoked paprika salt, and kaffir lime salt.
Yes, and they're all good for different things. Just as something simple like this summer, you know, you're making corn on the cob. Instead of just you doing the usual thing with butter and a little bit of salt and pepper or whatever, you can add some smoked paprika to your salt, and you get this really smoky kind of southwestern-y.
Yeah. We've actually done that. Listen, can you two hang on while we take another break for commercials?
Oh, sure.
All right. Well,
sure.
Okay, take a break.
You take your 6-year-old to the playground. You watch her go down the slide, then run over to the swings. Another mother strikes up a conversation. You take your eye off your daughter for just a few seconds. You look back at the swings. And she's gone. Your heart drops into your stomach. You jump up, your eyes searching. You cry out her name.
Lily? Lily?
From the top of the slide, you hear a voice.
Mommy, watch me!
Every parent knows that feeling. Imagine if she were actually abducted. Go to wirelessamberalerts.org. Sign up for free Amber Alerts on your cell phone. When an Amber Alert is issued in the areas you've chosen, you'll receive a free text message. If you spot the vehicle, the suspect, or the child described in the alert, call 911. Sign up today at wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. This message brought to you by the Wireless Foundation, the U.S. Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and the Ad Council.
A message for older drivers from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.
If you find that you have to drive at night, travel in well-lighted areas when possible.
Make sure your headlights are clean.
Keep your windshield clear, both inside and out.
Avoid driving at night in the rain or other foul weather.
Also, try to avoid busy streets or other stressful situations.
It's what makes an older driver a wiser and safer driver.
For a free brochure on older driver safety, call 1-800-993-7222.
Hi, my name's Maria, and I'm alive today because I was given CPR last year by Rick,
who took a class with the Red Cross after I received blood from Jamal, who gave blood
after being encouraged by my friend Angela,
who helped Jamal's whole family get the help and support they needed after losing their home to a fire.
When we come together, we become part of something bigger than us all. By getting involved with the Red Cross, you never know how many people your actions will affect. To get involved, visit redcross.org. The American Red Cross. Together, we can save a life.
You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're having a riotous discussion between us and our guests, Eric Gower of the Breakaway Cook, a cookbook that's extraordinary, and also Katie Doss, who has a wonderful finishing salts and salted caramels, and she has her own company, a growing, young growing company. And we were about to move on to a sugar blast, away from salt and onto a sugar blast with both of them, and also discuss a section of the book that has to do with pairing wines, because if you're breaking away, you need to know what you're going to do with the wines. Okay, who wants to start that one?
I think maybe I'll go ahead. One of the things that, maybe a good transition between salt and sugar is, when we started making, promoting our salt, not a lot of people knew about it. So one of the things that we did is I found this old recipe for French salted caramels. And they're obviously full of sugar, and we stayed in this wonderful bed and breakfast out in Brittany and France once, and I always talk to the guest, the host, and she gave me this recipe, and she was this old lady, French lady, she spoke almost no English, but the caramels were amazing, the flavors are unbelievable. I think the key is that she used fresh cream and fresh butter that was just churned, and so that was my first line of caramels that I sprinkled with fleur de sel, and the flavor and the contrast between this crunchy salt on top and the sugar and fresh cream and butter, all these very simple flavors created this unbelievable flavor that's just not like any other caramel you've tasted.
They're actually becoming very popular. I mean, they're not, the ones I've had here in San Francisco are I'm sure not nearly as fresh and as wonderful as the ones you just described. I don't see how life could get any better than chomping on those things. But
do you ever
I totally agree about how salt can accent sweetness. And I make these things called, I call them matcha truffles. And they're really simple little truffles. You just find the best chocolate you can. I like to use Belgian chocolate. And you combine it with a little bit of cream and a little bit of brown sugar. And you make basic truffles. You know, you may use a little melon ball and use these, you make these round pieces of chocolate. But what I really like to do is finish them with this stuff, this matcha, this green tea that you kind of sift overward. And then on top of that, you just put a little bit of either fleur de sel or even matcha salt that I described before. Mm-hmm. And, when you get the tea and the salt and this chocolate together, I mean, it sounds kind of an unlikely combination, but it's absolutely heavenly.
Now you,
absolutely.
Now, you really like white sugar, Eric. I notice. Here's what he says. He says, I cook with any kind of sweet you can imagine except white sugar. There is not a single recipe in this book that calls for it.
White sugar.
So,
I don't know what I have against white sugar. There's something about it that just...
I don't either. But so you use maple syrup, honey, and jam.
Yeah. Among other things, lately, too, I found this agave syrup that I'm really liking.
You like that agave syrup?
Oh, we have some pomegranate and agave syrup. It's really good.
Oh, it's delicious stuff.
But what's this thing about carrot juice? Come clean.
Come on now. No, carrot juice is a phenomenal ingredient, and I like to think of it as my stock. It really is a sort of my go-to stock that I have in the fridge at all times. And when I lived in Japan, they don't really sell carrot juice in Japan. I bought this ridiculous Champion juicer thing that was like $500 and weighed about a ton, and it made this tremendous mess, and it was like this huge hassle to get fresh carrot juice. that since moving back here, you know, I found that places like Trader Joe's and Whole Foods just stock these wonderful fresh squeezed carrots. And boy, they just add tremendous amount of flavor to anything. You know, like when I make rice, my favorite way to make rice is to use, instead of 100% water, I'll use, say, two-thirds water and one-third carrot juice. It just completely changes the character of the rice. It turns this kind of beautiful yellowish-orange hue and adds, you know, it imparts a little bit of sweetness to the rice and just gives it all this body. And I like to braise vegetables in carrot juice. I like to use it as a salad dressings. You know, I even make ice cream with it.
That's so delicious. Carrot juice. I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother, she would squeeze fresh carrot juice at 7 o'clock in the morning for me to eat for my breakfast before I went to school. And I love carrot juice. There is just so much to it. Completely undiscovered, by the way.
I don't know anything about carrot juice. I have to admit, I'm going to have to experiment with this.
Please do.
Just to make sure that our listeners know that Eric is totally crazy. let's do rhubarb baked eggs. This recipe was born, like so many others, by dearth and by hunger. I was ravenous, too lazy to go to the store, and happened to have a pile of rhubarb from my friend Lucille's garden and not much else in my fridge.
That's how that recipe was born. It's really a good recipe.
You know, I think it sounds wonderful. I think rhubarb on anything is wonderful.
But here's what.
And eggs take any flavor you want.
I'm going to exaggerate a little bit. He eats this for lunch. It's part of a stylish weekend breakfast. And guess what it's paired with? A glass of champagne, which of course is what everybody should have for a weekend breakfast, if not every morning. Which leads us to the...
He's saying that about you appreciatively. He's grinning from ear to ear, Eric. He's really into your book. And
oh, yeah. There's something with everything. And this man obviously drinks lots and lots of different kinds of wine.
Yeah, I do.
And tell us about that thought process that lies behind that, with some examples, if you can, Eric.
Yeah, I love wine, and I try to drink wine as often as I can, and especially for dinner. And I'll often start a meal by selecting a bottle of wine. I'll just think, oh, that looks kind of interesting, and I'll go kind of in reverse order of what a lot of people do. A lot of people start cooking, and then they'll try to think of a wine to pair with it. But I often just start with a bottle of wine that I want to drink, and try to think of a meal around it. And I've found that I'm probably more of a fan of old world wine than I am of New World wines. And what I mean by that is that the New World wines that come from California and Australia and South Africa and Argentina and places like that tend to be a little too fruit forward for me. They almost, I don't want to say destroy food, because they certainly don't, but it becomes harder to taste both the food and the wine when you have these gigantic wines.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, there's lots of reasons for this, you know, the whole parkerization of what's happened to wine and wine scores, and, you know, basically the fruitier it is, the you know, the more of a fruit bomb it is, the higher points it gets. And, you know, I've found that even value-wise, you know, some of these wines that are coming out of Spain and Italy nowadays are just really fantastic, especially places like Sicily and Sardinia, and they're really food-friendly. You know, they've had this long tradition of pairing local foods with these local wines, and they've really kind of figured out, you know, that these things go together. But I find with a lot of the New World wines, it's just, they're wonderful to drink almost as dessert. Like, I love a little, you know, don't get me wrong, I love these wines, but I like them almost on their own, not even before a meal, usually after a meal. Oftentimes they serve as my dessert because they're really big, and they're just like, it's like having a bowl of just super fermented, delicious fruit for dessert, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As far as pairing, you know, I try to stick with food-friendlier wines from those regions that I mentioned. You know, lamb will typically take something that's a little more tanniny, like a Pinot. You know, if you've got a really soft steak, that's an excuse for going for a little bit of a bigger wine, like maybe a Cabernet, but maybe not even. And, you know, champagne goes with absolutely everything. There's nothing.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
Now, is there anything to watch out for in the application of salt, Kathy? I mean, do you...
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. I've never even thought about that. That's a very interesting question. It'd be fun to do a kind of blind pairing with, tasting some salt and tasting some wines with them. That'd be fascinating.
I think you definitely need to. I mean, I agree with that completely. And I think it also depends on what you put in salt on, because it's, you know, I believe that food is a five senses experience. It's, you know, the taste and the smell and the sound, and you need to have kind of a different textures to go with the wine. So perhaps one of the things that we do is we take one of those French cheeses that are very mild, and you would put a little bit of fleur de sel in it, so the creaminess of the cheese, the crunchiness of the fleur de sel, plus whatever the wine that should be paired with it, is a wonderful experience, and it's definitely something that's just unforgettable if served right.
Sounds great. Now, do we have your information? We have the Das Food site.
No, we have Das Foods. Eric,
do you have a website?
I do. It's breakawaycook.com. www.breakawaycook.com.
Okay, and of course this is on our website.
But it's not yet.
Yeah, well, this will be on our website, so anybody can go to www.onthemenuradio.com. Click on bookshelf, I guess. OTM bookshelf
is exactly where you go.
So we'll get this book up on there too. What do you do next?
Me?
Yeah. Well, Katie, are you doing more products? You're expanding your distribution, I know.
We are expanding our distribution. We are also. I have right now 7 flavors of caramels. My latest is Café Cortado, which is a creamy caramel with infused with espresso with the roasted coffee beans, which is just to die for.
Mm.
It goes back to kind of the whole sensorial experience of caramel. We are thinking of other products. I think marshmallows is a wonderful product that's been completely shoved in the corner by everything else. I'd like to revitalize that.
I never go anywhere where I'm not confronted with a marshmallow. I mean, I used to think they grew on trees or bushes. I have no idea why anybody eats marshmallows. But we just had more of them last week. Every restaurant now has, and they're composed desserts they have.
Wow. That trend has not hit California yet, interestingly.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. I haven't seen them.
Okay, so Katie, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You're going to make marshmallows.
This is one of the ways we think we're going to look at it. Definitely chocolate is not out of the question. I'm incredibly interested in chocolate. I think we can do so much of it, because right now our caramels are not coated in chocolate. They're just your traditional chewy caramels.
Right.
I would love to. We have a chocolate caramel, but that's with chocolate incorporated in it. So, you know, possibilities are endless. It's just all the matter of bringing something unusual to it, some new experience.
Well, keep us posted on that. And Eric, what's your next project?
I don't know yet. I'm thinking about I'm thinking about writing all kinds of projects. But I whatever happens, I keep cooking this breakaway style. And, I have this gigantic file that I call Candidate Recipes, and it's already full of a couple hundred more.
Well, listen, we're going to have to save that to the next time with the next product, because they're going to move us right. Here comes the music, which means we're out of here.
Okay.
So thank you both.
It was a wonderful, wonderful time.
Thank you. And get in touch with each other, and we'll see. And we'll hear everybody. Everybody will actually hear us next week.
Remember, break away and sprinkle salt on everything.
Okay, till next week.
Same time, same place next week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye, thanks.
Bye.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.